and I'd gone to this athlete summit and run with other runners and just felt like totally demoralized because a lot of people are really good at downhill and excel. And they say they climb just to come down. And I'm like, I climb and wish somebody would pick me up at the top.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. For those of you who have been listening to the show for a while, you may have noticed a change in the introduction. The music is different. At the beginning is different. And there's a difference that I am here talking to you now. I've just gotten back from the podcast movement, and there were some great ideas there that I found to help make the show better and to help it to grow. And part of that is I'm going to ask for your help. First off, is that this has always been a one-way communication, just me talking or the guest, you know, me and the guest talking, and you guys listen in. So I want to give a chance for you to respond back, not necessarily with voice, but to get in touch with us. So I set up a Gmail account. It is ultramindsetpodcast@gmail.com. Now, I didn't want to do ultramarathon mindset because every time I type ultramarathon mindset, it's just difficult to get all those letters in at once. So it's just ultramindsetpodcast@gmail. So if you have ideas for how to make the show better, something you want to say to us, just use that email for now. I may have other ways coming up in the future, but for right now, that was the easiest to do is just send us an email. Also, if you had have ideas for guests, or just want to say something about what you've heard here, or if have a suggestion for a topic, want to hear from you want to give you a way to get in touch with us. Also, to help grow the show, talk about us to other people. Now, I was going to say tell other people if you like the show, but if you don't like it, that helps as well, because you know how it is with when you taste something sour, like you hand the carton of milk to someone and say, this smells sour. Why don't you taste it? I don't know why we do that, but you experience a sour taste, you share it with others. Now, I hope you like the show. I hope that, but the point is, tell other people about the show. That will help us to grow. And the last thing is I am adding a spot for sponsors. Now, that doesn't mean this is going to be just all advertising. These sponsors I'm going to look for are people that are products that I believe in, that I use. I'm not going to be promoting things that I don't believe in. And so as such, the first sponsor for the show is me. My name's Eric Dieter. This is your host. Part of what I do, the reason that I do this is because I am a mindset coach. And so if you have a thing that you are wanting to do, and I say that I help people find your epic thing. So, it doesn't have to be running 100 miles, but all of us have had dreams that there's something in life that you want to get to and you feel stuck. That's where a mindset coach can help. I can help you find your epic thing and go after it. So get in touch with me. Use the email ultramindsetpodcast@gmail.com and just let me know and I'll reach out. And no pressure. And I want to be a help to people. That is my primary goal. Yes, this is my job. It is what I do as a mindset coach. But my goal is to help you get to your epic thing and get unstuck. So now on to the show. My guest this week is Margaret Spring. Now, if you've seen Margaret on Instagram, if you would happen to go to her Instagram page and watch her, she is a happy runner. She looks like she's having a great amount of fun. And she is a running coach. She lives in Denver, Colorado, and gets to run and play in the mountains. And we had a good conversation talking about her as a runner, what got her started, and some of the things that she's had to do to improve as a runner, and focusing on things to improve some things that she really wasn't very good at, which was running downhill. So it was a great conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. And so here is Margaret Spring. Hey, this is the Ultramarathon Mindset. Welcome back. My guest today is Margaret Spring. She is a running coach with Mountain Endurance Coaching. She is an ultra runner. And I would say, I don't know if she would say this about herself, but I'm going to say she's an Instagram master. Margaret, I love seeing all the stuff that you post on Instagram, and you're very creative. And it's like your personality comes through in everything you do there. And so I'm really looking forward to chatting with you, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. This is such a gift. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you did on Instagram, you did an Instagram live, I think, or maybe it was an Instagram, I think it was live. And you talked a little bit about your history, and you told your story so well. I was just like, oh my goodness. I mean, you have a really cool story. So I wanted to have you on the podcast just to share what you have to say with a podcast audience as well. So.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. Yeah, that was definitely out of my comfort zone to share those things. But I was also like, as I age and get more experienced in life, I'm like, I want people to know that even in their 40s, they can still accomplish great things and make changes and learn to train right. And so I kind of wanted to share my journey with that with my community, just so they know, like, hey, I'm getting older, but it isn't the end.
Well, you know, I tend to be on the older side for compared to most runners. But I've interviewed people who are older than me. And so, yeah, that's one of the things that has been a passion of mine too, is to let people know, hey, you know, you're not too old to start moving and to start doing things. And it's just so many people, I think, get to a point in life, they just kind of settle in. And I've always been one. I think maybe deep down, I may be afraid of that. That I would settle in, and like, I want to keep going. So, yeah, you have that same, sounds like that same passion.
Same passion, longevity in the sport, and then always be learning something new.
Yeah. Well, so for people who didn't get to hear your Instagram live, tell a little bit, how did you get started as a runner?
Yeah. So I actually ran my first race when I was about 7 or 8. Which was pretty, pretty amazing. My older brothers were both runners, and I entered into this local race called the Troll Stroll. It had this black t-shirt with this hot pink troll, you know, puffy paint, all the rage in the 80s. And I, of course, was like, I can do everything the boys do. Just, you know, having two older brothers, I wanted to keep up. And so came out in a dead sprint and kind of led the pack of all the runners.
How long was the race?
It was a 5K. And I think I only like led the race for about a quarter of a mile, but okay. I did it with confidence. And I placed first female in the race, and I won. I think it was a 6 or 12 pack of Dr. Pepper, and also got a cooler with it. So I was in seventh heaven because I love Dr. Pepper.
So were your brothers running a race as well?
My brother Frank was running the race.
Okay. So yeah. Did you, the thing is, did you come in ahead of him?
Oh no, he definitely beat me, but I think, you know, probably that first quarter mile, I gave him a run for my money.
That's cool. So then did you run through, I mean, that's very early. Did you run in school then? Was that an event?
Yeah. So I ran track and cross country starting in seventh grade, and I was from a small town, or am from a small town, Winona. And my coach immediately saw that I had talent And, you know, initially the first few races ran in JV in seventh grade, and he immediately moved me up to varsity with the high school girls for both sports, because he was like, you have the talent, which I definitely could carry my own. I would say the biggest detriment in doing that in hindsight was that I never really learned to have that competitive edge, because I was always racing people that were better than me and more experienced with me, rather than racing people that were at my level and learning how to compete and how to lead the pack. So that was a little tricky, just in hindsight. And then I ran steeplechase in college for a couple of years. Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember, I mean, I've seen steeplechase. Is that typically run on a track, isn't it?
That's run on a track. And the year that I ran steeplechase in college was the first year that they did the 5,000 meter steeplechase for the women's group. And so that was pretty exciting to be able to run that distance. It was a little bit shorter previously, but you know, be one of the first females to start that distance. And it's jumping over barriers, and one barrier on the track has a pit of water. And so it's pretty deep at the start and then gets less and less deep as the pit kind of goes on. And so the goal is to jump further so you don't get soaking wet.
Okay. Yeah, I remember seeing steeplechase in the Olympics, but it's been a while. And so that's the one thing I remember. I mean, they always have the camera at the water feature, and I couldn't remember how many other barriers there were to jump over.
Yeah. I always was like, wait, when my coach mentioned steeplechase, I was like, isn't that for horses or something?
Yeah.
No, this one's for people. So yeah. So I did that, and then kind of took a little bit of a break from running, and got some really bad plantar fasciitis, I would say like around age 30. And
as a runner or just as?
As a runner. I'd been running and definitely running too hard. You know how we always like to do everything in full force.
kind of like your first race, right?
Yeah, exactly. The harder you run all the time, like the better you're going to be, which we now know is actually not the case and doesn't support longevity or health. But that was me. I'm going to run hard all the time.
Okay.
And so I got a really bad case of plantar fasciitis, and when I was about 30, and I took almost a complete year off running, just because I was like, this is so painful. I mean, it hurt to walk, and I just really couldn't function. I think, you know, even daily life without pain. And so I took a year off. And then my dad passed away kind of suddenly, and my car got broken into, and I ended up in the hospital for kidney stones, literally all within a matter of 2 weeks.
Wow.
And yeah, it was just this crazy time period. You've lived long enough to know that like life just kind of slams you sometimes.
Sometimes you have that kind of thing. Just like everything, it seems like everything happens all at once. I mean, in reality, it doesn't, but I mean, it feels that way when those things kind of converge. Is like, oh my goodness, everything happens at once.
Yeah. Not one more thing. And so for me personally, running was very therapeutic and healing in the past. And so I was like, I need to get back to running after having taken that year off and then having all these things happen, just as a part of my grief process. I'm like, I need this to heal. I need this movement. I need to feel all the things. I need to be outside in nature and kind of like explore this. And I also need something to keep my mind off, like all of this grief that I'm dealing with. And so one of my friends was an orthopedic surgeon, and she was like, well, let's just do some steroid injections with that and kind of get you back to running. And I was lucky enough to work with physical therapists at the time. And so it wasn't just me doing steroid injections. That was to kind of like reduce the pain and inflammation. And then I did all the PT work and then kind of got back into running and healing through that. And let's see, now I've been running, you know, for the last 14 years with of course, like some injuries, repetitive motion. But yeah, so I road race wise, I've run the Boston Marathon, and that was just such a special experience. That was one of those things too, where I was in like a really intense period of grief from some family things happening. And, you know, my answers always go back to running. And so I think it was in November, I was like, I'm going to run my first marathon. I'm going to qualify for Boston Marathon. And then I'm going to run Boston next year.
Okay.
Never run a marathon. Like, really didn't have that great of a time in my half marathon. So, but I was like,
no. Was that kind of your normal half marathon, was kind of your distance at that time?
Yeah. Half marathon was my distance, and it wasn't crazy fast. I mean, it was fine. It was like 1:52 or something. So yeah, to think about doing that and then decreasing the time at a longer mm-hmm. distance to qualify for Boston, you know, is maybe a little off my rocker.
Well, that's pretty ambitious. And to do that within a year, you're planning on, yeah. You
said that. Yeah. So I said that in November, and then my qualifying race was in May. So,
okay. so you were going to run Boston in a year.
Okay. I was going to run Boston in a year.
Okay. Yeah. So you had to actually increase your speed in a shorter amount of time. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Was like 5 months. I've said, I'm going to qualify for Boston. Let's just go ahead and do this and see where we're at.
I'm sounds like a typical runner thing to do.
Typical runner thing to do. I don't think I even told anybody what I was doing. It was just this mental thing that I'd put out for myself and said, I'm going to go ahead and do this. And yeah, I trained a lot with Snickers, the candy,
okay.
on my training runs. Yeah. Trained also living in Colorado, training through the winter to do a spring race.
Mm-hmm.
Not the best, but I went to this physiology lab. I think it was in January. So I set my goal in November, went to a physiology lab in January and said, hey, kind of wanted to do these things. Like, what do I do? And so we went through and got heart rate and pace zones, which was the first time in my life that I'd ever kind of experienced that kind of outlook or training ideas. And the exercise physiologist said, and by the way, you're going to need to eat more, like not only after your training, but during your training. And I think I had always been of the mentality of like, you do your long runs and then you go have a big brunch, but eating during any sort of workout was definitely not anything I was accustomed to. And so I was like, okay, give me the plan, you give me the heart rate zones, you give me the warm up. And so I trained for this race, for a Colfax race. And I trained for it all in zone two, really without doing any sort of, I would say maybe I did two or three kind of shorter tempo runs,
mm-hmm.
Just because I also wasn't like driven to do speed work. It was the winter. I'm like, I'm just going to have to, you know, kind of trust this. And went and ran my Colfax Marathon and qualified for Boston.
Oh, wow. So it was one race. It was one race. You did it.
One race of my first marathon ever. I'm like, I have no idea how to run this, but let's just try. And yeah, and I did it. I wouldn't recommend putting so much, like, I don't know, so much on one race.
So how did you feel? I mean, how did you feel? Were you, you know, like mentally, did you, as you were running, was it like this like clock ticking in your head? Like, I've got to qualify for Boston, or did you have like a backup option if you didn't?
I didn't have a backup option, but I also didn't let myself think like there was a backup option. And I went out really conservatively. I was like, not like my initial troll stroll race. I was like, I did not gun it and then just kind of totally get taken out. I was like, okay, I'm going to go out. I'm going to conserve energy. I'm going to eat my Snickers. I'm going to drink my electrolytes, and I'm just going to calmly do this and know that at least I have like the mileage and the distance in to run this distance. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, just did it. I had a friend kind of pace me, and he was awesome. He was like, okay, like, here we are, we're doing this. And so that was really such a gift as well, to be able to have somebody be like, oh, you can chill out. It's probably the one race that I've done in my life for whatever reason that I haven't had like insane anxiety around.
Okay.
Like performance, which mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I was just kind of like, I set this for myself. Nobody really knows I'm trying to do this time, and this is just for me because mm-hmm. this was my journey. Yeah, so I did that, and then I did Boston, which was a blast. Yeah, just kind of showed up to do the race and enjoy the experience, and then got into trail running.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of wacky. So
how did you make the transition because you know, road runners, a lot of times they stay, you know, that it's, you know, they like the road, and getting off on the trail that's sometimes a big step.
It's a big step, and it's kind of terrifying. And there's so many more things to like be distracted by and to look at and to navigate. And you also have to be incredibly patient because you're not pulling those fast times on the trail.
Right. And that's for people who are driven by numbers, trail running is sometimes hard to swallow because you can't run as fast.
Yeah, it's not even a thing. And actually getting into trail was kind of an accident in itself. Well, not, I wouldn't say an accident, but I decided to do Pikes Peak Ascent, which is a 13-mile run with 7,800 feet of gain. Mm-hmm. And just some of my friends were doing it. My boyfriend at the time was doing it. And we were both like, okay, let's do this. This will be fun. And I got to the top of Pikes. I had no idea how to train for it either. I was like, no idea what I'm doing. I'm going to go like maybe run a couple trails.
Mm-hmm.
Again, would have been good to have a coach for that, but ran it, got to the top, looked at my friends and said, I never have to do that again. And
that's a lot of, I mean, that's pretty much all uphill.
It's all uphill, and it's up to a 14,000 foot mountain. So by mm-hmm. the time you get closer to the top, you're sucking air and wondering where the oxygen is, and you're mm-hmm. you know, half like hallucinating. You're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
it's uncomfortable. And so I got to the top, you know, kind of said I'd never have to do this again. And then about 15 minutes later, my boyfriend at the time proposed to me at the top of Pikes. And I said, yes, now we're married.
Okay.
Fast forward. So that was my trail race. That was a trail race. I was done with it. And then fast forward to Pikes Peak registration opening for the following year, which I think is in like February or March. And I get an email from my husband that says, "Happy engagement anniversary. Here is your registration. I purchased your registration into Pikes Peak Ascent as our anniversary run." And at this point, I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me." Mm-hmm. And it's an expensive race to register for. So I was like, "Okay, here I go." So did the race, improved my time by quite a bit. I think I improved that year by almost 20 minutes, and had started practicing a little bit more on the trails. And then the following year went back and improved my time by, I think, like 8 or 9 more minutes. So I think I ran like a 3:27, which by no means is any sort of elite anything, but I think I was maybe second or so in my age group and within the top 27 women who ran it, which it was a championship race. So people from all over the world that year had come to race it. And so being even in the top 27 for me was huge. And placing in my age group because there were people from all over the world doing it. I think it was maybe a Sky Race series or something, Golden okay. Trail Race series okay. is what it was that year. And so that was kind of a proud moment for me to be able to improve that much from my first race. I think I'd taken over a half an hour off my very first time. I was more confident, I was stronger, and I was just like, okay, like maybe I think it was one of the first times where I said to myself, maybe I do belong in this trail community. Maybe I do belong on this hill, like in these races. Because I think, you know, a lot of us that aren't elite runners are constantly questioning our sense of belonging. So I knew at that time that I was decent at running uphill. I love running uphill. I love the feeling of being out of breath. I love the feeling of being in control, which you can be on in the ascent, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay, here I am. I'm in control. I know exactly where to step, and it's slow enough where you can plan your every move. There's no high speed in the vertical races that I've personally done. So of course I chose when I did a race, it was an uphill race because I knew it was something that I could be kind of more successful at. And of course, to go up, a lot of time in training, you have to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So downhill was not my favorite. In fact, I was terrified of it. And so I was the person that would beat everybody, you know, the people I was running with to the top and hang out. And then they would get to the top and bomb down the hill. And I would get to the car probably about a half an hour later. And they're like, you know, they've already had their beers, they've had their snacks, they're ready to go. They've had their cold soak in the stream, and I'm coming down like feeling really demoralized. And again, that sense of self-doubt, like, oh boy, I do not belong here. Like, I can't do this whole thing, and I am never going to be a downhill runner. And I think that was also detrimental to me to continue to tell myself the narrative that I'm never going to be good at something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, you know, we all have our things in life where we're like, that's just not for me. And so fast forward a couple years, and I was training for the Trans Rockies race. Do you know what the Trans Rockies race is?
Yes. I know a lady who she's training for it this year, and she's
it's such a great race. And so, also kind of crazy that I registered for that, because I've never run more than a half marathon on the trail. So to jump from.
So you were running mostly uphill races and mostly right in the half marathon range.
Right in the half marathon. Had never done.
So your training runs were the ones where you were having to come back down.
Yeah. Training runs were where I was having to come down. Like I would go do a 14er and ascend the 14er. And then I would be like, oh, hamburgers. Now I have to go down. Like, I'll see you guys in a few hours. And I'd gone to this athlete summit and run with other runners and just felt like totally demoralized, because a lot of people are really good at downhill, and excel, and they say they climb just to come down. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I climb and wish somebody would pick me up at the top.
So if you chose an uphill race, they did that, right?
Everyone
everyone met you and like, you never had to go down.
Yeah, exactly. Mount Evans Ascent, they bring you back down. Pegs Peak Ascent, they bring you back down. And like all these things are great. My friend and I decided to do the Trans Rockies run, and one of my training runs to do it was the Leadville Marathon. And so that was going to be my first experience running a trail marathon. And so again, you know, leading into it, I think about 3 weeks before the race, I started having incredible anxiety, because I knew that as part of the race, I knew I'd be fine on the climbing, and as part of the race, I would have to descend. And I was just like, there's no way that I can do this. But this is one of my training runs. And also in the 120-mile stage race, I'm going to have to go up and down. And so I reached out to Gina Lucchese. Do you know who she is?
No, I'm not familiar with her.
She is an amazing athlete, and she had the Mount Whitney FKT for quite a while, and she's really into supporting women in sport. And so it was just kind of one of those things again where I was like, I'm just gonna contact her, because she's this phenomenal trail runner. And I had looked through the Leadville results, and she had some of the fastest downhill times on previous Leadville races. And so I just messaged her out of the blue and was like, hi, Gina, you don't know me. But I was just wondering if you could tell me a little bit about the Leadville course and the downhill. And you know, for me as just kind of a average athlete to ask an elite athlete and have any, I felt really uncomfortable, but I was also like, if I don't ask, I'm not going to know. And I don't think she had any like business like responding to me in terms of like, you know, how we think about ourselves.
Right.
And she responded and wrote me paragraphs. This is how you do it. This is how to do the race. Here are points where you want to power hike rather than run. Here are places where you can kind of let loose and let go. And I was like, that's great, but I actually don't know how to run downhill, and I'm awful at it. And my descents are equal to my ascent time, if not 1.5 times slower. And she was like, that's not a problem. You know, she's just like so kind, so gracious, so encouraging, and she really wants women in sport to feel supported. And so she gave me some tips. She was like, okay, if you go to this trail in like Denver Golden, this is similar to the descents. And if you practice on a grassy hill and just start kind of working on some turnover, that's great. And keep your feet under you, like read the trail from like 6 feet ahead, because your feet are going to go where your eyes are. And so there were just those little kind of tips and tricks that she gave me that I only had, I would say, 3 weeks to work on. and not really even because I was in taper phase, but at least I was like, well, I at least have some tips. So I at least can try a little bit of this. Showed up at the Leadville Marathon and was so anxious. Didn't sleep the night before. Had a complete panic attack the night before where I was like, just to let you know, like to my husband, just to let you know, if I die on top of the mountain, like it's okay. And he was like, well, that's not okay. And I was like, but that's how I feel right now. Literally did not sleep the night before the race and was in fight or flight. Got to the race, saw Gina Lucchese, who gave me a hug. And I just said, oh, hey, thanks for giving me all that information. And she was like, sure. Did the race. That was the year Kara Goucher did the race. The Leadville Trail Marathon.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you know who she is?
No, I'm not familiar with her.
So. Yeah. So Kara Goucher is an Olympic road marathon runner.
Okay.
She's gone to the Olympics, I believe, twice for the marathon, and just has some really obviously done fast times.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
She is from Northern Minnesota, from Duluth.
Okay.
And she also is in her 40s. So ran the trail marathon and had some success. I think I maybe had 9th overall for all the women.
Wow.
Yeah. And then got 3rd place in my age group and got to stand on a podium with Kara Goucher.
So that's cool. Did you get pictures?
I did get pictures. All right. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is kind of the only time in my life where I'm going to be on a podium with an Olympian. Which was pretty awesome. And leading up to the race too, there were like maybe once or twice where I saw her on the trail and we just stopped and chatted, and not like because I knew her, just because I was like, oh, you're Kara. And she's like, I'm horrible at the downhills. I said, me too. We can both cry there together. So I was like, okay, here I am. Like I've had a little bit of success on the downhill, at least enough to bring me in top 10 women and also give me a podium spot, which also gave me a gold coin for the Leadville 100.
Okay.
Another big jump. So I'm like, okay, so I just did the marathon, trail marathon. I'm going to do this crazy Trans Rockies run and then I'll do the Leadville 100, which
so that's still coming up for you.
That's still coming up.
So the Trans Rockies, are you doing Trans Rockies this year then?
No. So I did Trans Rockies 2 years ago, okay. The 6 day, and my friend Randy and I did it as a fundraiser for childhood cancer. We raised almost $20,000.
Oh, wow.
Which was so fun. And each day we had a child in mind that we wanted to run for, and we wore their favorite color for the run.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So I'm a pediatric occupational therapist. So I've worked with patients with childhood cancer. And so it was just something that was really important to me. And, so, you know, again, in my head, I have these goals or things I want to do. And one of my goals was to win, every stage of the race so that I had a medal to take home to each of the kids.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it was like, I've raised
of the Trans Rockies.
Of the Trans Rockies run. Okay. And so, Randy and I ran it and we won every one of the 6 stages, which was such a gift. You have to run the entire thing together. And we were able to collect medals for each of the children, which it was so fun to give them medals for that.
That's cool.
And I think for the team category, we may have had, I think an hour and a half or 2 hour lead on like the next position.
Wow. That's a significant.
Yeah. For the race, which was great. And by no means like, did we, you know, do anything like Lucy Bartholomew and Hillary Allen, but for us, that was amazing. We, you know, we won the whole thing for the teams. We won each of our stage race and we got to raise all this money for childhood cancer. And so still, you know, still for me, running downhill was a huge insecurity. And at that point, even though I'd done like a little bit of practice, I'd started kind of reframing things in my head. I went to a Solomon running camp where, again, Gina Lucchese was there and they talked a little bit about downhill technique. And so I started practicing that and I started going out with individuals that were better than me and having them run ahead of me and then following their lines down different segments. And so I would say there's a few segments in the Denver Boulder area that I frequent. And so it's like, you know, if you're on Strava, sometimes you get competitive. And I think I was always like 800 on the downhill segment. I'd be like, oh yeah, remember that time that I did the downhill segment and I was 765th? That was awesome. that was incredible. So my mindset, you know, started to be, and I started to surround myself with women who were encouraging, who would take the downhill slow with me, let me follow them, and let me ask the question, what if I could be a little bit better at this? What if I could become, you know, a downhill runner? Everybody's a runner. Everybody's an uphill runner. Everybody's a downhill runner. But our mind kind of keeps us from believing those things. And yeah, just really started to chip away at it. So going back to those segments, reading the trail, lifting weights, getting stronger, following people down the trail. And I think last year I went to the Leadville course and picked a segment to do. And I was like, well, maybe I can get in the top 10 on this, whatever, 4 or 5 mile downhill segment. And I got the crown on it.
On Strava.
On Strava. Yeah, okay. I was like, here we go. Like I just, okay, I can do this. And it was all this lead up and preparation. And by no means is it a race, but for me, being somebody that was so slow on things, to go back and be able to kind of hammer something really built my confidence. And so that's kind of where I'm at today. I'm going back to different segments, and sometimes now they're a little bit more technical, and literally like I have a 3.8 mile segment that I was like, okay, let me just try this. I think my initial time down it was 55 minutes for 3.8 miles, and I have it cut down now to almost 28 minutes.
Wow, that's significant.
Yeah, it's significant. So that was like, right now I have the crown on it. I mean, there's so many talented downhill, you know, runners and people, and by no means is it like crazy fast time compared to what other people can do in elite runners. But for me to be able to take off 23 minutes on a, you know, less than 4 mile segment was significant.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say it's a 4 mile segment downhill, I mean, you're in, you know, I live in Kansas City. So, you know, here our hills end at about 300 feet. You know? Yeah. So you're talking about, you know, 4 miles, it's almost all primarily downhill. There's a few places levels off a little bit, but then there's no dips going up and down. It's just all downhill.
Yeah. Like 2,500 or 3,000 feet kind of of descent. It's pretty, maybe 2,500. It's pretty steep.
Okay. 2,500 in 4 miles is a pretty, yeah, that's a,
yeah,
that's steep.
So before I was like, oh, I'll just maybe take a step, maybe take, you know, I would stop to walk over things.
Yeah.
Or stop when a technical section came. And for me, I'm learning to be that it's okay not to be in control. I think the speed and downhill is like, you feel like a Muppet, right? Mm-hmm. You're like going down and you're like, what am I doing? And you just like, you land and you take your next step, and you have to be willing to feel, I would say, a little bit out of control with things, which for me as somebody that likes to be in control is a really scary feeling. And I also am really terrified. I'm a cautious person, and I'm terrified of like falling on my face and knocking out my teeth. So,
well, and it's like, you're going over rocks too. I mean,
you're going over rocks. You don't never know when a rattlesnake is going to come out. You know, all those things. It's like, oh boy, you're dodging bikers and dogs. And I like to go early so that that's not a part of my game, but the rattlesnakes are.
So have you ever jumped over a rattlesnake?
Yes.
Okay.
One time I was on Matthew Winter's Park, and I don't think my heart rate has ever been that high. And it was a rocky section, and I was just like, oh my gosh. And they're just like blue. Terrifying. So terrifying.
And I don't, I guess, you know, if I've never been, I mean, I've always thought of Colorado and never linked rattlesnakes with Colorado. So I know there's a certain elevation above, you know, above which they don't go, but yeah, I know in the lower elevations, it never has occurred to me that there'd be, you know, that would be something that would be, I mean, maybe one or two, but saying, well, yeah, I really need to watch out for rattlesnakes.
Yeah. One time I was running up in Boulder at NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, and I saw four rattlesnakes within like a half a mile.
Wow.
Yeah. That was terrifying. I think this year I've only seen two rattlesnakes on my trail runs.
Okay.
Now, but still,
are those the Western Diamondback?
Ooh, I don't know what kind. I know there's like six different kinds.
Yeah. But, well, in Kansas there are primarily the rattlesnakes that the majority of them where I live they're pretty docile. In fact, they'll mostly, if you come up to them, if they're laying out, they'll just lay there and try to not be seen.
Yeah.
You really have to agitate them to get them to even rattle. Now farther in Western Kansas, there's a different brand that they're pissed off all the time. and if they see you coming, they're going to be really aggressive.
They're going to let you know they're there. Yeah. My thing is, if I'm have enough room, I just let them, and I can see them, I just let them pass.
Mm-hmm.
And like do my thing. On Instagram, people do these wacky things where one time I saw somebody's story and they're like, I just picked it up and threw it up. I'm like, no, that's not what we do. And no, you shouldn't be telling your community of people that that's what you did, because that's actually how people get bitten. Yeah. It was terrifying. I'm like, everybody's seeing this. Are people thinking this is a good idea? This is terrifying.
There was a race. There's a race in central Kansas that they said they've had people, you know, they say, watch for the rattlesnakes and just leave them alone. So the only people have been getting bit is the men who think that they can pick them up and move them off the trail. It's like the
women,
they go around. They've got a rattle and fangs for a reason. You leave them alone.
Yeah, you leave them alone. Yeah, so that's kind of my story with running. But I think what I want people to know is that you can always get better. And I think it's a mindset to do it. And I think having a coach or somebody that believes in you is also incredibly important, which I do. My coach is Anna Mae Flynn, and kind of fun, like to go out running with her. And, you know, one of our first runs, I'd discussed, one of my goals was to get better at downhill running. And, you know, you say the negative things, like, I'm not a downhill runner. And we went for a run and she was like, you are a downhill runner. And I was like, really? And she was like, yeah. And I'm like, well, you race at the elite level. So if you think that I have potential in this area, then I'll take it.
So what were the things you had to, I mean, it was, you said a lot of it was in your mindset. I mean, part of it, I mean, the separating your mind and body the distinction is hard, and your mindset can actually cause your body not to function well if you think you can't do it. So where was that, you know, what was that blend and that mix? What were the things you did to kind of overcome that?
You're exactly right, is that I was approaching it with so much fear. A lot of it was fear that I was stiffening up and I was, you know, hitting rocks wrong and I was overstriding or just stopping and giving up. Some of the things I did, I went to trails that weren't as technical and weren't as steep. And I started practicing just turning over and going down something that was more like buttery smooth. And each time I would go back, I would pick up speed a little bit and pick up confidence. And with downhill running and downhill training, you have to be really careful because the effort that you put in and the load on your joints is pretty intense. And especially if you're approaching it with speed. And so you really have to be cautious to balance that. So if I went out and did a downhill like segment or little training run, I would take the next week, I would do something on flat and practice flat turnover. And then the week after, I would pick another 2 mile segment or go back to that same place and practice turnover. So that was one thing I did. Another thing I did was a ton of strength training and a ton of core work because, you know, preparing your body for the load and the speed and the pounding and the force was, I needed to do strength training and core to prepare my body for that. And also to keep my pelvis in a really neutral position so that, you know, I felt really balanced because running is essentially, you know, kind of almost like a one-legged activity, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have mm-hmm. standing balance on one leg. And so I did a lot with that. When I went on my like slower zone one and zone two trail runs, you know, at first I was like, this isn't a time to practice or this isn't going to do anything for me. And what I learned is that those actually were the most important runs for me. And they were important because I was able to really work on reading the trail and learning the trail and learning footing in a slow pace with confidence, so that I could go back to it and have a little bit quicker turnover. And so learning in a slow environment felt so much safer and helped me learn how to navigate the trail. And so I always tell people, you know, one of the most important things to learn at first is how to read the trail, trust your eyes, trust your brain, trust your body. And you can do that in your zone one, zone two. Go out someplace and just work on your footing and keep your feet, you know, under your body and take quick steps and land fully on your feet. So those were some of the things I did. And, you know, it's taken me two and a half years. It's not something that came quickly, but to be 44 and have learned in the last 2.5 years that I can become even better at something and that I'm now a more well-rounded trail runner because I've learned to navigate things in a different way. It's pretty incredible. I mean, you know, anybody at any age can make progress when they're willing to put in the work and then believe that they can. So,
yeah. So when you were working on turnover, that's the speed of your feet. Mm-hmm. So how did you do that? Because the quicker the turnover, the less chance you really have, less chance of falling. If you're moving, right. if your feet are moving faster, it's actually a lot safer. So how did you work on that? I mean, because you were talking about going in zone one or zone two.
Yeah.
You're slower. How did you like engage your brain to like, let's pick up my feet and get them spinning like a wheel.
Let's get it going. Yeah. So I did flat track workouts every other week. So I'm okay. let me get comfortable with speed and turnover in a safe environment and figure out that I can do this. And then it's like, okay, if you can pull off this pace here, then let's practice that kind of turnover on, you know, like a softer grade, like a 4% grade or 3% grade, and just go and then see if you can have faster and faster turnover for that. So there's a kind of a gravel road or fire road segment that I would go do every other week and be like, okay, this week we're going to run it just 10 or 15 seconds faster. You know, for whatever the 1 mile segment. So that's how I practiced. I practiced flat and then alternating with like a kind of softer grade.
Okay. So did you do any like mindset work of visualizing yourself doing that, or you just went out and practiced?
Just ran out and practiced. But I feel like visualization is huge, and I'm trying to figure out how to make space and time for that so that I can do that. one thing I did do, like mindset work wise, what I did do is just while I was out there, you know, think of ways or reasons that it was joyful or could be joyful. And so to actually have fun with it, because there was so much fear around it prior to that, that I wasn't even enjoying myself. It was awful. It was terrible. I mean, I could get down to the end of something and be almost in tears because I was so defeated. And so for me to start reframing in my mind that this can be more fun, and you know, just smiling. And I think sometimes when I go out on trail runs now, I'm like, it's so fun when things click and you're like, this is fun, I'm going. And you know, I'll kind of like scream or something and be like, ah, like we're doing this. Which is really fun to have such an intense shift between like being terrified, saying I'm never going to do anything, to being curious about maybe getting better, to like starting to create joy in that process. So. Mm-hmm.
Now, and you're, I know you're a coach as well. You're a running coach with, so talk a little bit about your coaching and we'll probably wrap up in a minute. So
I'll have to go quickly, but,
how can people find you?
Yeah. So people can find me on Instagram, Margaret T. Spring, or through Mountain Endurance Coaching. So I'm a coach for Mountain Endurance Coaching. And what I really love about coaching is helping people through some of the things that I just talked about in terms of confidence and ability. And I'm really lucky to work with two other coaches, two athletes, founder Anna Mae Flynn and Ryan, who are both elite runners, who really value everybody in the community, all of our athletes, and see worth, and also look at running as a lifestyle, which has been such a gift to be able to partner with people who really want to see people like grow in the sport, love the sport, and feel a part of the community.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it too, please take just a minute and send them a link to this episode. And if you enjoy most of our episodes, tell your friends. That's the best compliment you could give us. I truly enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week, and I appreciate the fact that you take time to listen. If you want to get in touch with me, send me a DM on Instagram at Eric Dieter. That's ericdeeter.
or you can email at ultramarathonmindsetpodcast@gmail.com. For the show notes for this episode and more, go to theultramarathonmindset.com and click on the podcast tab. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life, and a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.